Hi, y'all. This is Kristen Chenoweth.
Hi, I'm Gloria Stefan.
This is Sarah Bareilles.
Hi, I'm Patti LuPone.
This is Lin-Manuel Miranda. You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Attention all theater lovers, this Sunday, April 21st, Broadway Podcast Network is holding the first ever Broadway Podfest, a full day of podcast recordings with some of your favorite Broadway stars, live from the Museum of Broadway, which is right in the heart of Times Square. The day begins at 11 a.m. Eastern and features a full day of programming that you don't want to miss. Visit bpn.fm/podfest to get all the details and register to attend for free. That's bpn.fm/podfest.
You're listening to Stagecraft, Variety's theater podcast, bringing you in-depth and behind-the-scenes with the biggest shows on Broadway, off-Broadway, and beyond. I'm your host, Variety's theater editor, Gordon Cox. On this episode of Stagecraft, I'm talking to Billie Piper, the English actress who's probably best known in the U.S. for her roles in TV shows like Doctor Who and Penny Dreadful, but who in the U.K. had a huge stage success with Yerma, a new adaptation of the Federico Garcia Lorca play about one woman's struggles to have a child. Piper's Olivier-winning performance earned reviews that called her earthquaking and devastatingly powerful. American audiences will get their first chance to see Piper on stage at New York's Park Avenue Armory, where she's reprising her role in a month-long run of Yerma that ends April 21st. She's here in the studio to talk about what it's like performing in a shattering show day in and day out, and we'll also chat about her early days in the music world, her TV work, and, of course, her time as the fan-favorite companion Rose in Doctor Who. Hey, Billie. Thanks
Hello.
For being here.
Thank you for having me.
So there was a time about a year and a half, 2 years ago, when folks in New York in the theater industry would come back from a trip to London, and every single one of them would say to me, oh my God, have you seen Yerma at the New Vic yet?
Oh.
It was they just couldn't stop talking up the production and your performance in it, and I felt like it was one of those, and it doesn't actually happen all that often, one of the big hits over there that really resonated here with folks.
That's good to hear.
For listeners who maybe don't know a whole lot about the project or maybe much about the play that inspired it, tell us about Yerma and your role in it.
Okay, well, Yerma is an old play written by Lorca, and it's sort of a classic. It's a play that I didn't study at school because I didn't finish school, but apparently the students who stayed on at school all studied. So it's a historical piece of work. I got an email about it being on at the Young Vic like in 2015, at the end of 2015, and so I read the original text and I thought it was beautiful and really moving, but really poetic, and I couldn't imagine how it would work in its current form now.
Yeah.
But then I heard that Simon Stone was involved, and I think
he's
has
the
a
writer director.
Yeah, and he has a sort of history of reinventing classics and staging them really cinematically and making it feel very sort of natural and authentic and not really like a theatre experience. Every part of that appealed to me, and then the theatre that we played was also a sort of big love of mine. And so, I don't know.
This is the Young Vic that you're talking about.
This is the Young Vic. Yeah. So, like, I feel like...
And it's updated, this version. You're a blogger, a journalist.
Yeah, it's great for that, because as much as I love the original, I sort of didn't want to be weaving baskets and lamenting about the oxen,
sure.
You know? It was like, it's sort of... I don't know. I was so excited when he was going to make it more modern, and I think it sits really well contemporarily, because it's about a woman who can't get pregnant and how that sort of consumes her life. And this is something I talk and hear about frequently amongst friends and in the media. So it feels very, very topical.
Yeah.
And then the minute something feels like that, I'm interested, you know. If I feel like it's something that people are talking about, it's very exciting.
Right. And so is that part of why you think people responded so strongly to the piece? Was its resonance there?
Yeah, I also feel like it feels really current in its look at modern relationships. Like, you know, the pressure of the world around us and what it means to sort of coexist now that men and women are working in equal measures, and sometimes women, you know, more, and what that looks like in a relationship, and then this age-old fact that we are sort of governed by a biological clock, whether we want to support that idea or not, that is a fact if you are looking to have children at any time. And you know, it's an emotional experience, and I think people relate to it because it's as much as it's about a woman not being able to have a kid, it's also about a relationship falling apart, and we all know what that feels like. So I think people really tap into relationship stuff because it feels quite therapeutic, doesn't it? And it's, people want to connect with material like that.
And it's staged in a really interesting, that set is super cool. Is the short?
Yeah, it's super cool. It's it's staged. It's just us with two sheets of glass surrounding us. So it feels like you're, actually, I don't know what it feels like because I've never been in the audience, but I imagine it feels like you're watching your neighbors from your window. Mm-hmm. It feels quite voyeuristic in that way. And I think that's what makes it feel. I think the reason people get quite moved by it, apart from its content, is that it feels very real because it's not, oh, I'm in the theatre and they're performing for us. It doesn't feel like that. It feels like you have walked in to someone's life and you're sort of watching through your curtains, you know, and that makes it feel pretty, you know, it's sort of immediate.
And this piece goes to some really kind of raw and emotionally devastating places. Did that, as you were reading it and thinking about doing it, what did that give you any hesitation at all, especially if you knew you had to do it six days a week?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I never think about doing it beyond rehearsing it stupidly. So like I always just go, oh, that looks really, like I can get my teeth into that, and then suddenly you're doing it 8 times a week in the UK at least. And
how many times are you doing it here? 7?
Yeah. Which is already really exciting. Like just that one less show, yep, just feels like a game changer, and it will be, because those midweek matinees are killer.
Yeah, I bet.
So yeah, it will be. The play is pretty short as well. It's like 90 minutes.
Is it particularly sort of grueling to do as an actor? Is it really a tough one?
It is pretty tough, but it rockets through at such speed, and I'm on pretty much the entire time. And I find it quite a cathartic experience myself. I feel like theatre sort of satisfies me in that way, sort of gets rid of loads of my own stuff. So, yeah, I mean, you're done by the end, but but it's not, I don't know that it's a massive sort of dark toll it takes on me. I don't know that I experienced that.
What does your day look like when you've got a show at night? Do you do anything special in terms of maintenance?
I try and keep it pretty low-key. I've got two children, so I am with them. And in a way, I think, you know, when I didn't have kids, you know, theatre is quite a chaotic existence, you know. But I think there's a sort of something quite relaxing about doing a show like this and then going home to a real normal life where you can't get too consumed by the role.
Does the fact of your having kids affect your experience of this role?
Yeah, I really think it does. I really think it does, because I, you know, excuse me, some people say to me, you know, how, you know, isn't it hard to play this part, knowing that you've had kids, and so you can't really imagine how it feels. And it's like, actually, it in a way, it sort of helps, because I think I've had been fortunate enough to have kids, so I sort of, the thought of not being able to have them, knowing what I know about having had kids, is really quite devastating emotionally. And I think that, you know, that's something that has always crippled me about the play.
You won an Olivier for your performance. Congratulations.
Yeah, thanks.
Does that, as an actor, you've just won a big award for your performance. Does that feel like pressure when you return to that performance?
No. No.
Oh, that seems very healthy. I applaud you.
I don't think so. Great. No. No, I don't think so. It's really nice to get an award like that. Like, it's wild, you know, and you just sort of think, how has this happened? And I'm really crazy grateful to be recognized in that way and whatever. And then, but then it's, you know, I don't know, it's sort of, it just feels good. And then anything beyond that, I don't know that I have any anxiety around it.
Where do you keep it? The award?
In my living room on my mantelpiece.
Well done.
I have no sort of humility around that. I'm just like, it's center, you know, like, it's just right there. Just in the minute everyone walks in. Yeah.
So I feel like
my son squirrels them up to his bedroom. He calls them piston cups, like from Cars, yeah. The movie. Uh-huh. So he likes to sort of squirrel them away into his room, which I'm totally cool with.
Yeah. So a lot of people here in the U.S. probably know you first and foremost for your TV work. But
yeah.
In London, you've done a number of plays. You did Reason to Be Pretty,
yeah.
The Neela Butte play. You did The Effect that Lucy Prebble, yeah. The play that Lucy Prebble wrote. Do you enjoy acting on stage?
I do, yeah. I really enjoy it, especially only if the material's good and if you have a connection to it. Otherwise, it's one of the most taxing things about being an actor ever.
Do you think of yourself as a theater person?
No. I like 30% of theater I go to see. I'm always curious as to how long a show is before I go. Like, I have a bit of a teenage...
I mean, that's all of us.
A teenage feeling around going to the theatre. I feel a bit like, oh, God, it's a big ask. It's a massive investment. Yep. You know, there is etiquette around it that you cannot escape. You know, it's expensive. So I get, you know, I have all of those feelings. But when it's good, there is nothing like it. So you've just got to take a bit of a punt.
What is it? Yeah, what is it that you find you respond to when you go to theater? What is in that 30% that unites it?
Really, really honest work. So where you can, I don't know, like people sort of wait. I don't know, like flesh and blood a bit. Yeah. You know, yeah. When you see people really, really going for it. You know, like. Like, sort of seeing, when you see Beyonce live, it's like, it's different to seeing other people live. It's, you know, whether, I don't know how she's experiencing it, but when you see it live, it feels so soulful. It's beyond moving. When people just bare their soul in that way, it's like, there's nothing like it.
It sounds like being here in New York was a big professional dream of
yours.
Tell us about that.
Yeah, it's my professional dream.
And why? Was that to act in New York? Or
to do a play in New York has been my dream since I was so little. And it makes me quite emotional thinking about it. Like, it's just, it's quite weird. Like, I feel like I've willed it so hard and now it's coming true. So there may be some power in that, you know?
Yeah. And you've never lived in New York before?
No, I've come here for, you know, sort of wild, chaotic weekends here and there. It's going to be hard to imagine 5 weeks here, you know? It's going to have to take a totally different approach.
Yeah, especially when the kids come.
Right.
Yeah. And a lot of folks here in the U.S. might also not know about you that... you were a for reals pop star in the UK, right? Did you enjoy performing on stage then, too? Was that a thing that you...
That's all I liked about it.
Interesting.
Yeah, I was never like... I'm a massive fan of music, but I didn't play music and I didn't write music. but I love performing live. So I think I got a real taste for it there.
How did you get into that?
I went to a theatre school and I started modelling when I was a kid. And it was one of those really...
Was this in London?
Is yeah, like superficial things where by someone looking to sign a female soloist, a young girl, saw me on the front of a magazine and came to the school and asked me to do a demo tape. And it literally happened like that. I mean, it was pretty shotgun.
Do you have any favourite songs of yours that really mean something to you?
I like Honey to the Bee, I think is a really cool, sweet sort of song. I don't know, like I really found that part of my life really exciting at first and then pretty exhausting. And sure. And so I'm just kind
seems of... Seems like a tough life. It was... Especially for a young person.
Yeah, really young and teenage and sort of exhausted by that anyway. But I... So I've had a lot of sort of negative memories about it. So only recently have I started to re-engage with it as a memory because I feel like I blocked it all out for a while, like in some sort of trauma response. And I am... But I'm reliving it a bit now because my kids are showing interest in it.
Oh, yeah.
And that means that I can enjoy it again.
Yeah. And then at some point you made a decision to shift out of that,
yeah.
to transition out of that.
Yeah.
Tell us about that. And was acting always the next step?
I always wanted to act. So that's why I went to theater school. And I guess at some point I just realized that I couldn't carry on in a profession where I felt like a charlatan. And I just jacked it in and started auditioning.
Right.
It was just like that, really.
Yeah, wow.
Mm.
And was that a hard life? Was that a hard transition? Or
it was tricky. It was really frustrating. And it meant that I had to do a lot of proving and proving and proving. And, you know, people were curious. But it felt like an experiment to see me audition in a room, or if that's how it felt. Yeah, that was my feeling about it, whether that's true or not. That was my interpretation. And so I had to do a lot of that, and that felt really unnatural. But, you know, we all have to do that at some point in our lives.
And then how did Doctor Who happen? Was that...
It was just as simple as auditioning, and then...
Did you know this? Were you a fan of the old series?
No, I never watched it as a kid. And I'm not a sci-fi fan. So it had very little interest for me. But it's been a bit of a life changer, that.
It seems like it, right?
It's huge. It's huge. And it has this fan base that is sprawling. And it brings me here a lot.
Yeah. How so? In terms of
in conventions
fan stuff
and fan stuff. Uh-huh. It's kind of... bigger here than it is even in the UK.
Oh, is that true?
Yeah, it feels like it is.
Yeah. It seems like you enjoy it. I mean, you keep coming back to it, so I feel like it seems like a thing that you enjoy.
I do enjoy it. I go back to it because of the fans, really. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, it's kind of weird to revisit a role over and over again, even though I'm basically doing that now. But, like, it's... I guess it feels like I just do it really with the fans in mind, you know?
How do you feel about the new Doctor Who, the film about Jodie Whittaker?
Oh, I love her. She's an amazing actress, and I think it's a really wise, progressive move, you know?
And so after Doctor Who, how did you then go about thinking about the projects that you wanted to take on next?
I guess every role I do, the next one is in reaction to the one I've just done. So when I did Doctor Who, I was like, great, but I don't want to be in this sort of family genre anymore. And so I'm going to go and play a prostitute
in
Secret Diary of a Call Girl, which is the polar opposite. And also it just, I guess...
Well, speaking of that series, actually, Secret Diary of a Call Girl was written by Lucy Prebble,
yeah.
who you then worked with on The Effect. Are you going to continue to work on things together?
Yeah, we're creating a show together, and it looks like it will probably shoot next year.
Oh, great. Great. Yeah. Can you tell us about it?
Basically, it's about a woman, an actress, who's life is hacked. And all of these, well, actually something quite simple but provocative comes out into the public domain, and it really destroys every facet of her life. Even though it's something that's, you know, kind of something we all do. And it's, so it's a massive life crisis, which is how it feels to be in your 30s, actually. And then what the hack does is it forces her to unmasks her, and suddenly she has to, you know, kind of tap into these truths and sort of, you know, embrace her 30s, which are, I think, very challenging. I think your 30s is a time where you start reflecting on everything you have or haven't achieved, or where you're going and what your mental health is like, and are you in a circle of repetitive negative behaviors? And I feel like your 20s are like, just, you know, sort of, I mean, they're fun and they're wild and they're without consequence, and, you know, obviously there are dark moments in your 20s, but pretty much when you compare them to your 30s, they are a bloody walk in the park. Do you know what I mean? And in your 30s, it's like, wow, shit's getting real. And it's and as a woman, it's a good climate to talk about what it means to be a woman in your 30s and what you're subjected to and you know, how you move forward. So
what's the name of that show?
I can't really say the name at the moment.
Okay.
But it's very dark.
I was just going to ask. It sounds dark.
It's dark, but it's, you know, it's funny. I mean, it's upsetting and there's crisis, but, you know, I often think that creates some enormous, you know, laughs. The two things for me go very much hand in hand. You know, stress is funny.
Yeah. There's some humor in Yerma, yeah?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, people going through it is really hard, but, you know, there's also a lot of comedy around stuff like that. Yeah. Yeah. You have to laugh at moments, life crisis, right. And, you know, at some point, because otherwise it just kills you, doesn't it?
Yeah. And I know a lot of people here who were excited about Penny Dreadful when it was on. And
I know.
Followed it. And it can pretty safely be said that you had the character with the most kind of delightfully batshit crazy journey, right?
I mean, she's nuts.
Was that fun to work on? It seems like a great time.
It was awesome. It was awesome to work on. I'm just sad it's over, you know? It happened so suddenly, and it was a feast of a role.
I bet, yeah. It was so... There were many, many facets to that role,
let's say. Just super challenging and, you know, and sort of, you know, was it weirdly on point, that character, with everything that's happening.
Yes, that's true.
It's bizarre. It was like a premonition.
Yeah. Yeah, at one point you organized an army of women.
Army of women to destroy male kind.
Yeah, the patriarchy, basically.
I know. Which is pretty much happening.
Yeah, exactly.
Sorry, guys.
Yeah. And so you'll be in Yarmouth through toward the end of April.
Yeah.
What's next for you after this?
I've written a film, and I think I'm going to... Well, I know I'm going to direct it.
Great.
I just can't imagine directing it at this point. I think I'm going to direct it. It's happening, and I've got to come to terms with that.
And tell us a little bit about that. Where will you
shoot? It's called Red Beast, and it's going to shoot in the UK. And it's, again, it's something I'm obsessed with, this sort of... modern movement and what it feels like to be that generation of, you know, relationships that of people who are sort of sandwiched in between traditional unions and the modern movement and the complexities around that and you know, what we believe in and sort of in the absence of religion for many of us and now this big female movement. It's it's pretty stressful. Like, I want to say, like, female emancipation is amazing in many, many ways, but it's also really hard. And there's a lot of pressure around it, because there is a pressure to be, you know, very militant and in full allegiance with it all. And sometimes it's really confusing. And sometimes it's very nuanced, and it needs a lot of sensitivity. And I really like guys, and they're not all assholes, you know, and I want to talk about that dramatically. Like, so those are its themes.
Do you think you'll do more writing?
Yeah. Yeah, I do.
This is your first screenplay.
This is my first screenplay. I mean, I've been writing, you know, stuff since I was really little, but I've only just got into the habit of finishing anything. Right. Yeah.
Yeah. And are there any stage roles you'd like to play next? Are there?
I don't know what I would do after this, to be honest. It's really hard act to follow. It's really ticked so many boxes for me as an actress. I just don't know what to do after it, really.
I feel like as a singer, you must get asked about musicals at some point.
I'd love
right?
to do a musical film, but I understand that doing a musical in the West End or on Broadway is really hard.
Yep.
And you really have to take care of yourself.
True.
And it just sounds a lot of work. It does, because it goes on forever, and it's like so many shows, and you have to be so careful with your voice, and I don't know, like, I just don't think I'm cut out for it. I think because I did it a lot as a kid, I have this emotional memory of it being a real slog.
Yeah.
And so it doesn't really appeal to me, but the thought of doing it on film in a really sort of visually exciting way makes me really, you know, I'd love that.
Well, I can't wait to see what that is.
When it appears. I might write it myself.
Yeah, exactly. Mm. And I'm really looking forward to Yerma.
Thank you.
To seeing you on stage in lots of things.
Yeah.
Thanks
thank
a lot,
you.
Billy.
Thank you.
Great to talk to you. Thank you. That was Billy Piper, the Doctor Who and Penny Dreadful star, who's now reprising her Olivier Award-winning role in Yerma at the Park Avenue Armory, where the show plays through April 21st. On the next episode of Stagecraft, I'll talk to the playwright Lynn Nottage, the two-time winner of the Pulitzer Prize, whose latest play, Malima's Tale, tracks the life of an elephant through the international ivory market. Until then, see you at the theater.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway, and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but
yeah.
Not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.